If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new podcast, where today we return with, actually, episode 118 of your favorite Formula One show. Knowing Wheel is back this time around, ready to review the Spanish Grand Prix. And I'm joined by a man that not only got the wrong week to go to the race, but also has completely got the wrong country as well. Jamie, how are we doing, mate?
I'm good. I'm not sure what race you're talking about, to be honest. But yeah, this is the last time for a while that I'll be recording in the same time zone as Matt, which is going to be fun next week. Yes, we'll wait and see where I turn up in the world next week. But yeah, excited to go through the race. It was actually quite good, surprisingly.
Yes, yeah, I mean, obviously, Barcelona, of course, we did the pre-show last Friday. That was good fun. Of course, we sort of spoke about the track changes, what we kind of hoped would be the case, and a few other bits and pieces as well, of course. So, of course, yeah, if you want to sort of know all about that kind of things, go back, check out that pre-show, of course. But today, Jamie, it's a bit weird, because we can kind of just jump straight in with the action, can't we? And, I mean, free practice was fairly undramatic, wasn't it? You know, there was a little bit of rain on Saturday morning, but nothing, you mean, you know.
And a Logan Sargeant crash, just to
complete. And a Logan Sargeant crash, but that kind of wasn't too surprising, I suppose.
Not
because
really.
Rookie. But yeah, let's just jump straight in then, Jamie, with I think what absolutely cannot be argued against, the weirdest qualifying session we've had so far this year, wasn't it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I think it's because the green track, wasn't it? So it rained overnight and in the morning a little bit in Barcelona, and the track was just unbelievably slippery, and no one kind of knew why. And no one even changed, really, like, no one got used to it. We saw De Vries have two spins in exactly the same place. Alonso went off immediately at the final corner, and quite, like, that kind of derailed his weekend almost, didn't it? And then, yeah, it was just bizarre. Everyone was kind of going into the gravel, and eventually, I think it was Albon was the nail in the coffin, went into the gravel and dragged a load of it back on the track. So that was a red flag to sweep the track, which, I mean, the cars are going to do it for you eventually, but yeah.
Yeah, we had a red flag, what, like 4 minutes in, didn't we? After,
yeah.
Like you said, it felt like half the cars on the circuit had fallen off at some point or another. And of course, you know, the other big talking point was seeing Q1 was that potential threat of rain that could have been arriving onto the circuit as well. So, of course, everyone is out there trying to get laps in desperately, apart from Ferrari, of course, still. Whether they just knew there wasn't actually going to be rain this time around, we still don't really know. But, yeah, Ferrari clearly didn't feel like they were under pressure, and they really should have, at least in the Charles Leclerc camp. He just could not find anything, could he? No pace at all.
Nothing. It was bizarre, really, and it's like, I saw people, obviously, Leclerc fans on Twitter were saying there's got to be something wrong with the car. Like, there's no way, because all through Friday practice, he was comfortably quicker than Sainz. And then just got to Saturday, and he just completely lost it. And it was really weird, because we don't see that from Leclerc at all, really, especially on a Saturday. But, yeah, he just wasn't at the races at all, and eventually qualified P19, which is insanely low for a car that on paper should be in the top four teams quite easily.
Well, let's not forget, what, three races ago, it was that very same car that was on pole.
Yeah, Yeah, and obviously Science was on the front row in Q3. So it was very strange. I do wonder if they're going to make up that the car did have an issue just to cover Leclerc's back. But if there was no issues, that's a really, poor show from Leclerc.
I'm not a Leclerc fan, but I would be surprised if there wasn't anything wrong with that car,
similarly,
to be honest.
Yeah.
I think there was something off with that Ferrari car that obviously you can only see once it goes for a full tear down back
like
at
a cracked chassis or something.
Exactly, that kind of thing was the impression I was getting. For Leclerc, like you said, obviously to fall off that much from Friday to Saturday without, you know, the only sort of logical reason why that happens normally is if a driver has a big crash.
Or if they're,
and
like,
then of course doesn't.
Ill physically, I guess.
Yes, yeah. But for a driver to fall off that badly overnight for seemingly no reason doesn't quite add up to me. But of course, then you can ask the other question of, well, if he never crashed, how did the chassis get... I mean, it's Ferrari, anything could happen, let's be fair.
Yeah, they probably dropped it back.
You know, in Ferrari, yeah, like trying to move it around or something like that. Bizarre team and organisation. But as you said, of course, he was joined Logan Sargeant, a bit of a nightmare qualifying for him. I think we all knew deep down, didn't we? This was going to be one of those weekends where pretty much everyone can fight for points apart from Williams. They were going to be a long way off. Leclerc found himself in a Williams sandwich there with Magnussen and Bottas in Q1. I know we've mentioned it before, but yeah, Bottas still. Again, this weekend, Zhou Guanyu just seemed to have a better of him, didn't he?
Yes, music to my ears. I love that. And really not great from Bottas at all. And it's a track that generally, like certainly the junior formulas, is a track you kind of measure driver ability at, because it's such I think the last 3 years the F2 champion has won the feature race at Barcelona.
There we go, Ollie Behrman.
Yeah, could be this year as well, who knows. So it is a track which rewards, well, the drivers and the cars who are performing at their best level, which is why Pastor Maldonado won his only race here. So
of course,
yeah. It was a weird weekend for Bottas, and kind of a weird season ever since Bahrain, really.
Yeah, very up and down so far. I mean, it was the first time Zhou Guanyu had made it into Q2 this year, though Bottas hadn't joined him, which was quite a surprise as well. But I mean, yeah, the real drama, though, Q2, Lewis Hamilton and George Russell colliding down the front straight.
That's bizarre.
You know, as a non-Mercedes fan, TV, what did you make of that one?
I just don't see, like, what happened. I just don't really understand. So obviously he had a car, I think it was an Alpine, coming slowly on the right-hand side.
Ferrari.
Trying to get out of the way. Was it a Ferrari? It was Sainz, was it?
Yeah, it was Sainz.
And you had Russell ahead, who just finished a lap, and Hamilton behind, who was just starting a lap, I believe. And Russell just seemed completely unaware that Hamilton was there. Hamilton goes to the left, and Russell hasn't checked his mirrors, doesn't see him there, and runs him almost off the track completely. And Hamilton gets quite severe front wing damage, and it was lucky it wasn't a bigger crash, really, but it was complete miscommunication. Really bizarre collision, and I'm surprised there's not been a bigger fallout over it. I guess because it was so accidental, they're kind of just like going on with it and getting on with it themselves. But yeah, what have you seen, any insider Mercedes stuff that I might not have seen?
I love the fact you believe I've got insider Mercedes info. I mean, yeah, you summed it up quite well. I think that George had bailed out on his lap already and was trying to go for another one, which is obviously why Hamilton was so close from starting that, because I don't think he knew that George had bailed out on the original attempt. But, yeah, very, very weird collision. Of course, that meant that George Russell was out downing P11 alongside Sergio Perez, rather surprisingly. Nightmare for him. Zhou Guanyu and then both AlphaTauris there. Nick De Vries getting the better of Yuki Tsunoda on Saturday.
Yeah, is that first time this season? Second time this season?
I feel like it's happened once before.
Yeah, but solid. Ever since the big talk of De Vries getting dropped in like three races, he's picked it up a little bit. So we can put some respect on his name.
Well, I still stand by my statement that I know I made earlier on this year that actually the AlphaTauri car isn't as bad as everyone made
out
to be. It was just Yuki was getting the results it should have been getting.
It's certainly comfortably in the midfield.
Easily. You know, people going, oh, you know, it eats down there with the Williams.
Well, you've kind of got
it's
Williams.
Really not.
You've kind of got Williams, and then five teams, then a bit of a gap, and then four teams. And I guess Alpine are kind of bridging that gap at the minute anyway. So,
yeah. very, very interesting one. I mean, to be honest, after all the drama throughout Q1 and Q2, I think we were all kind of expecting crazy scenes in Q3, weren't we? And then Max Verstappen goes and drops a 12-2 instantly in Q3. And like, well, that's over then.
Yep.
That one's gone.
I don't think anyone really was hoping for pole position outside of Verstappen. So, especially with Perez out, that's really the only bit of chance.
Logical explanation, but without any, you know, the fact that we didn't have Russell, we didn't have Perez, we didn't have Leclerc in Q3, you know, you thought, could Max do something? But again, no chance.
No chance. Performing at an incredibly high level and, yeah, just getting pole positions and race wins for fun. So
stat padding, that's all he's doing.
Yeah, well, it happens to the best drivers, doesn't it? End up in the best car and they have a season where they just destroy everyone. So there we go.
Yeah,
this is his 2020.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to think now as well that we were saying literally 2-3 Grand Prix ago, you know, there was still that faint bit of hope.
I was never saying that.
No, I know we weren't. I know both of us, you know, just kind of quashed that hope that anyone had. But the fact that, you know, 2 Grand Prix ago, we were sort of talking about, you know, whether, you know, Perez can try and keep it going, you know, whether we could end up with a Rosberg miracle type season for Checo, and immediately it's gone. But, you know, it is what it is. Of course, Carlos Sainz, though. Very good result by him. P2 on the grid. I think that's Ferrari's, obviously, after Leclerc's pole. The only other time they've started on the front row so far this season. Lando Norris, P3, which, did you hear his interview after qualifying, Jamie? Did make me laugh.
I did just see it, but I've completely forgotten what it was.
So he basically said he wanted to try and hang on for dear life, and they went, what's P3? He went, no, for points, which, as we'll mention in a minute, didn't happen either.
Well, didn't last that long either.
No, exactly. Gasly was originally fourth, but two pretty bad blockings going on in Q1 and Q2 there, meant they've been bumped way down the order.
And they've just given up on penalty points with Gasly as well.
Apparently, they don't want Gasly to be banned, do they?
Yeah, well, which they know that the penalty point system is stupid. So they're just pretty like, much. Okay, we'll just forget about it until we'll get them to 11, and then one penalty point away from a race ban, and we'll just stop giving them. So
I mean, it does feel like, doesn't it, that it is completely dependent on the driver rather than anything else. Like, because Gasly hasn't got this image around him of being a dirty driver, despite the fact he probably will be now on about 15 penalty points, they just don't want to ban him for some reason. Gasly had originally qualified fourth, was going to line up P10. Lewis, therefore, inherited fourth ahead of Stroll, Ocon, Hülkenberg, Alonso. And, you know, Stroll, first time he's like qualified Alonso this year after I put him on fraud watch last
week.
Yeah, we were
rinsing him less than a week ago. And here we are, Stroll, really solid weekend. And as we said, the best drivers come to the four at Spain.
Come to the four. Absolutely mad.
I wonder if Alonso did... I don't know, lost some confidence. I don't think he would have lost that much confidence from the off in Q1, but he was never at it from that point onwards. Or kind of a weekend, the Aston Martin wasn't great, but to see Alonso behind Stroll was a big surprise. And also, shout out to Hülkenberg, quality.
Yes, yeah, Hülkenberg, another good qualifying effort, of course, meant that he got some big points on Sunday as well.
If they could make a car that looked after its tyres at all, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'm going to Williams' world all the time. But anyway, Jamie, talk me through the race start then between the top two, Sainz and Verstappen, duking it out. I mean, we knew exactly what was going to happen, and it did, didn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of an exact replica of what 2021 Spanish Grand Prix with Hamilton.
Not quite, because
Verstappen was P2, wasn't he, that day? But from pole position, Verstappen immediately covers off the inside. Their reaction time was basically the same. And the launch was pretty similar. Sainz actually went for the soft tyres, so was gambling on taking the lead, basically, which wouldn't have lasted long had he had it anyway. But got a pretty similar launch, pretty similar acceleration, but obviously Sainz gets a little bit of a toe, the momentum grows, and he goes to the outside line as turn one. And you're all thinking, oh yeah, here we go. Verstappen's just going to run out of road, much like 2021. And lo and behold, pretty much, he just took way momentum into the apex, much shorter line, obviously. And that meant that by the time Verstappen was at the point of running him out of road, he was fully ahead. And Sainz had no choice. But
Sainz had already backed out.
Yeah, he'd already backed out.
I think he's probably a better way of describing it.
Yeah, which is why it's different to something we'll get onto later, I'm sure.
It is why it's different to something we'll get onto later on. But still, it's so annoying, isn't it?
It's just...
So annoying.
Yeah, it is a little bit annoying. But then, I guess, had Sainz tried to keep the momentum around the outside and kept, if he was able to keep his car alongside, because obviously Verstappen's line is so aggressive that he is banking on the fact that Sainz won't be able to go with him, which was true in this case. But had Sainz tried to keep it around the outside and had a nose alongside at the point Verstappen was going to push him off, I would like to have seen what the FIA do then.
Well, I mean, it would have just been probably, you know, if they come together at the right angle, it would have been both of them
out of the Grand Prix, potentially.
But, I mean, this is just what frustrates me, because, again, this isn't a personal frustration with Max Verstappen, but he has completely caused this in the small as he swivel battle. It's just the fact that
you play to the rules that you're given. Yeah.
Totally. I like it. Well, the thing is, he hasn't played to the rules he was given, or was he back in 2016?
No, not originally.
But the fact that they've moved the rules around it now to make it work, I mean, I desperately, if I was in any position of power within the FIA at the moment, you know, we've sorted out track limits now. You know, the drivers have learned. You get 3 strikes and you're out if you go outside the white lines. Simple, standard rule. What is wrong with telling them, if there's a car alongside you, you have to into a braking zone, you have to give them a car slip? Especially if Sainz was ahead. Because then, of course, psychologically for Sainz, you know, he can go... Because, of course, he just went into that corner knowing, right, Max is going to run me out of the road, I may as well back out now and protect myself from Lewis behind. If he goes in there knowing that Max has to give him some room, otherwise he gets a penalty, surely you think, actually, at home race, it's worth a punt trying to get around the outside of him at turn one, isn't it? But it just is pointless, because you know it's not going to happen and nothing will happen from it.
Yeah, but also I don't... Because you look back at battles between the likes of like Alonso, Raikkonen and Schumacher back in the day, I guess Hamilton as well to some extent, they only left space when they had to. It is a very tight, marginal call, but it's kind of, in my head at least, it's kind of front wheel to rear wheel. And if you've only got a nose there, like what we saw with Norris and Hamilton at turn 2 on lap 1, if you've only got a nose there, you are asking for trouble. Like, you don't really deserve space.
Completely.
But if it's front wheel and rear wheel are level, you deserve some space.
And that's what I mean. I did mean, to be fair, front wheel to rear wheel in that instance. Not just that you try and get a tiny inch of your front wing down the inside
and then call for a penalty
to jump out of the way. But it just desperately feels... The problem is, well, it just doesn't feel like Formula 1 are ever going to look at it. But you just
saying
think,
that,
you know,
we'll come on to it later, but like the later penalty, I believe anyway, is at least a step in the right direction.
Hopefully, but they're just not consistent with it, are they?
No,
still? I think that's the problem. but obviously, like we said, you know, Max held on to the lead down at the start. A little bit of Constantino up behind, as we mentioned from qualifying, completely wrecked Lando Norris this afternoon. I think, you know, he was wrong place at the wrong time, to be completely honest.
It was a bit of a misjudgment from him as well.
But unlucky.
It was unfortunate, but I think he will look back on that with a bit of regret, because it was a little bit...
Hindsight is a beautiful thing. I don't think he could expect Hamilton and Sainz to have to back off as much as they did.
Maybe not.
But of course, that wrecked his afternoon. Of course, picked up front wing damage running into the back of Hamilton. I did see a brilliant tweet from someone going, Lewis Hamilton is the only driver in the world that doesn't get a puncture from that.
It's literally, he's so lucky. He's the luckiest driver on the grid.
Luckiest driver on the grid. And I always, when anyone says that, just go back with Abu Dhabi 2021.
Well, that was... he should have just covered
true.
The inside.
It's just true. Yeah, right, okay. I think the other one, of course, that Abu Dhabi turn one was George Russell, of course, you know?
Yeah,
he didn't bother with the Fernando Alonso strat.
Yeah, play to the rules that you're given. The white lines don't exist if you just go around the bollard.
Well, like we said, Alonso does that. He's a wily old fox. He's clever, he knows the rules. Anyone else does that, and they're a cheat, apparently.
Yeah, it's true.
Did you actually see that? I forgot to mention this to you last week. After we spoke about Monaco, you know, after Alonso pit had made up like 5 seconds on Max Verstappen.
Yeah, he jumped the chicane, didn't he?
Completely missed the chicane,
but
and, like,
he didn't
even slow
down.
He
did it like slightly skillfully, in that because it was raining, he just accidentally locked up and just straight lined it. Yeah, he knows what he's
like
doing.
Like he did in Miami last year, where he cut the chicane deliberately to get someone out of his DRS.
And when his last race before his first retirement, when he went for fastest lap, just knowing in Abu Dhabi, when he just went for fastest lap by straight lining the turn 11 chicane.
Bizarre, but again, it's the fact that Alonso apparently just gets away with it all, which always surprises me. Speaking of Alonso, though, his son had a very, very good start. Lance Stroll up to P3, got around the outside of Hamilton through turn four. That was quite impressive.
It was a good move.
Stroll. Thought maybe something might happen from
maybe
this.
Maybe a little podium finish for Lance Stroll.
Exactly. You know, we've all wondered about it so far, but yeah, anyway. I mean, it was just, it felt a bit like Miami, didn't it, though, Jamie?
Yeah.
Because there was a lot going on, but none of it was particularly exciting.
No,
the
moves,
a weird race.
Yeah, the moves independently were nice to watch. I mean, they were very, like, especially had what, Tsunoda, Joe and Hülkenberg just literally killing each other all the time. I don't know how they ended up in the wrong order so often, but, like, after every pit stop, it would basically Hülkenberg undercuts them both, and then Joe and Tsunoda have a little battle, and they both get past Hülkenberg again. And that was going on, like, all, like, three times throughout the race, which,
yes,
that was
yeah.
quite interesting to watch, but you kind of knew that the fastest car would end up in the right position at the end. So
yeah.
It was, independently, the moves were nice, but because it was kind of for very minor finishes, obviously I cared a lot because Joe was on for his first points of the year, or first proper points of
Has
the year.
Has he not
anyway.
Scored?
No, he got some in Melbourne, but that was red flag related. So, so yeah, I think it was, there was a lot going on, and that's what makes a non-safety car race so good. I mean, I spoke about this in Baku, after Baku. Safety cars around pit windows absolutely destroy everything. Because everyone's then got the same tyres and there's no offset. Whereas you get a race like this where it's pure strategy is so offset between all the cars, there's a lot of mix-up in order and everyone has to keep overtaking each other. So at least there's something to watch.
I mean, that was the other good thing as well, that, you know, the fact that it was a proper two-stop strategy made it so much better this weekend. I think there's hopefully quite a lot that Formula One can learn from this weekend. And the final chicane removal really did
quality.
You know, there were a lot of people going, "Oh, the overtakes are a bit too easy."
I don't
think
they were.
Sensibly, they were. I thought they did pretty well with the DRS zone.
Yeah,
that meant that you pretty much always had a decent chance.
But you still, you couldn't.
Know, if you messed up the final corner, you still wouldn't get.
Like
that.
You weren't overtaking from 9/10 back unless it was like a Red Bull on a midfield car.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the time as well, you'd be right down into the braking zone before you were completing the move as well. But yeah, I mean, like I said, of course, there was just kind of a lot going on, but not a lot of it particularly exciting. So obviously, Lewis jumped Stroll again for P3. You obviously mentioned about how... Hulk was jumping people. But of course, yeah, he kept getting jumped by Piastri every time I seem to look.
Yeah, every time you look, he's just getting overtaken because he just undercut like three cars in the pit lane. And then get overtaken by them.
Yeah, bizarre. But I guess, you know, the other really interesting, of course, like we said, you know, apart from George and Checo coming through, was of course that third Crusader. But this is Charles Leclerc in a Ferrari, of course, starting from the pit lane in the end. He was on the hards, only driver to start the race on the hards. Obviously, Lando joined him at the end of lap one, was setting fastest laps. And then Ferrari take him off the hards on lap 17.
Yeah, I saw in his... post-race interview that he just didn't have any grip on them, so it wasn't just a dumb Ferrari thing, it was just he couldn't get the tyres switched on, so
he
decided to cut
anything this weekend.
Yeah, didn't have much going for him at all really, so unfortunate for him. But yeah, the Ferrari's pace in traffic, like you know, you see the Mercedes and the Red Bull were able to come through the traffic quite easily. I think Leclerc ended up behind Gasly, who was a bit out of position after lap one and just could never really overtake him, so then was limited by the slightly slower Alpine, can't overtake the even slower Alfa Romeo or Williams or Alfa Tauri or whatever.
Yeah,
so
just that
Leclerc
staggered,
was just stuck in a DRS train.
Yeah, it honestly seems as well like Ferrari got set up the wrong way this weekend. And I think that's the thing, of course, when we've only got 3 hours of practice now. And, you know, obviously a track that, of course, back in the day has always been really high downforce, but now no one quite knew what sort of wings and things like that to come with.
Yeah.
Did make things a bit more interesting.
Well, it is quite a flowing track now, isn't it? We said this on Friday.
Very high speed in some places. Very, very good fun. Like I said, throughout a lot of the afternoon, though, I mean, we had Alonso. It amazed me that he only was able to get past Joe Guanyu on lap 21.
Yeah.
Guanyu was actually doing
very Joe was doing really well at early pace. And really well all race, really, I thought. He had a quality race. So that was nice to watch. The Aston Martin was just not really on the pace at all.
Aston Martin and Ferrari both struggled a lot.
Yeah.
Didn't suit their cars particularly. which of course helped Mercedes with the B-spec upgrades. Because to be fair to Merck, throughout most of the afternoon, I mean, they were able to pretty much extend as far as Max was in the first stint, despite being on the softs. Of course, Max was covering them off. But, you know, if the B-spec car means that they can afford to take some risks and potentially give Red Bull headaches here and there,
that's kind of what they're aiming for, wasn't it?
Too much, can we?
No, definitely not. And like we kind of said a couple of weeks ago when they bought the upgrades in, we said their aim would probably be to get into second place and be able to be annoyed.
Be cemented there, kind of thing.
Yeah. And that kind of seems like what they've done.
Yes, yeah. I mean, obviously, Hamilton obviously pit and then sighted pit a long time before him, so got the jump on him lap 28. Perez was obviously just making up moves. I was quite surprised, actually, to be honest. Obviously, George Russell had made so much more progress early on than Checo.
Yeah, well, it's because he missed turn one.
Exactly. He didn't make any places from that. I watched it back.
Yeah, so he left the track and came back on the track at the same point. But then because he'd carried so much more speed effectively by not bothering with turn two, he was able to overtake them into turn four and running outside of turn three and four. So it didn't... I mean, he had a very good start anyway. But it helped.
it certainly helped. I'm never going to argue against that. But yeah, Sainz was kind of like the only one that seemed to be able to stay near the Red Bulls and Mercedes. And of course, yeah, by lap 35, George had obviously jumped in as well. Lap 50-ish, obviously, we then had both Red Bulls and Mercs obviously back into the pit lane again, bought on a set of stops to go to the end of the Grand Prix. This was about the time Max was given his warning, wasn't he, for track limits, which of course he was very, very worried about. To take fastest lap.
Yeah, he was like, what's my fastest time? And they told him and was like, you've only got one warning left before a penalty. And he was like, okay. And then sets fastest lap and then chills. It's so pretty similar to like 2013 Vettel in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely Max's villain era. Yeah. We're all just here to put up with it, I suppose. I mean, there was two more controversial things, wasn't there, Jamie, later on in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Esteban Ocon trying to get revenge on Fernando Alonso. That one did make me chuckle.
Yeah, that was a bit, like, it was actually interesting. I watched the Channel 4 highlights, and they said earlier in the race, Alonso was overtaking somebody else, I can't remember who it was now, but they were like, the way Alonso sits in the slipstream is still so late, kind of opens himself up to being weaved on last minute. And they said it's exactly like what we saw in USA last year when he was driving for Alpine against Stroll, where he hanged in the slipstream for so long that by the time he pulls out, if Stroll decides to make the move, he doesn't have time to react. And that's why they crashed then. And then that's almost why they crashed with Ocon, because he was very entitled to stay in the slipstream as long as possible, because back when Alonso started racing, they had respect for each other. So you can just go to the inside and trust they won't make a late move. But yeah, not anymore really. And it was almost a plane crash really. But he kept it on the track and was able to get the move done. So yeah, very good stuff. Yeah. And a much better move than the one that's absolutely overhyped into next week, which is Vettel on Bottas in 2017.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Vettel just weaving around for no reason behind him afterwards. it's ones like that as well, though, that I start to wonder whether they should be worth, even if it's just like a penalty point and no time penalty.
Or a black and white flag is kind of designed for that, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. That kind of thing as well still frustrates me. Because obviously Ocon's done that. It hasn't been a crash, so he's got away with it.
And it's still kind of dangerous driving, yeah.
Exactly. That shouldn't be how it works, I think, at the end of the day. But the other one, of course, the big controversy, because apparently Yuki Tsunoda now is everyone's favourite driver this year, was that 5-second penalty for the almost collision with Zhou Guan Yu.
Yeah, yeah. And on first watch, I thought that should be a penalty, but it probably won't be. And I was proven wrong, thankfully. So, yeah, I think the frustrating thing for a lot of people is the inconsistency. Because if you look at the rule book, that's absolutely a penalty. And lo and behold, it was. So I understand why people are annoyed, because we see that perfect example, 2021 race start with Verstappen on Hamilton was the same thing, pretty much. If anything, it was probably worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that the FIA are more tentative on lap ones, which I don't know why they are, but they just always are. And they're also more... they're more tentative when it's a driver racing for the win. Like, yeah, you compare it to Austria 2019 as well. That was kind of the beginning of this let them race mantra, which started because all the Ferrari fans were crying about Canada 2019. So yeah, you kind of, I completely get why people are annoyed, because it's been happening generally Max Verstappen, but also a lot of drivers in the field, where you get the inside line and it doesn't matter how much alongside they are, as long as they're not ahead of you, you can force them off and it's not a penalty, which is dumb.
Well, you just carry a ridiculous amount of speed into the corner that they would run off the road anyway if they tried to hold it alongside you, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's just so frustrating, isn't it? So I want my good old honest Formula One back.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Back when drivers respected each other and everything like that. I mean, this was the other thing as well, of course, that, you know, the controversy early in the weekend, wasn't it? Why haven't we just got a consistent stewarding body at this point?
It's so true.
It seems so ridiculous.
Because the stewards are made up of four people. And is it two of them change every race?
Two or three, isn't it? Yeah.
It's insane. It's like, no wonder you can't get consistency when everyone's thought process is so different. Like,
in a multi-billion dollar sport, I think that seems very archaic.
I reckon they should just put it on Twitter and do a poll.
Yeah, every single one should be done by a poll. I saw there was an F1 league that was going to try and do that. Decision was going to be based off people on Twitter, which would have been hilarious.
That'd be so bad. Put it on r/league racing stewards. That'd be great.
Exactly. But, I mean, yeah, Yuki, I felt he was unlucky to get that 5-second penalty, but I also completely get it.
And yeah.
It did, of course, allow Zhou Guanyu to pick up some points as well.
Yeah, I think they both deserve points in that race.
Yeah. Like,
you know, if Zhou finishes ninth and Tsunoda's 10th, that's absolutely fine. But it was a shame for Tsunoda that it was just a penalty. Because I think, you know, we've seen it before where you overtake off the track, for instance, you can give the place back. If the team told him, like, or told the FIA, sorry, okay, Tsunoda drops back behind Zhou, and then we'll call it evens, they probably would have gone with that, and then they both get a point.
The FIA won't do that unless it's their bartering with Red Bull in Saudi 2021. You look back on some of that, it's no surprise that Abu Dhabi was such a disaster when this was going on, wasn't it? So weird.
Well, Brazil 21 was an absolute farce as well. At that point, like, you know what, Max, you got to drive better than this, not going to lie.
just so weird. But anyway, Max Verstappen, of course, wins the Spanish Grand Prix, their third win, in Barcelona for him, second in a row. Lewis and George, though, on the podium. Perez wasn't able to get between them by the end, so clearly the B-spec car working quite well for Mercedes.
Yeah.
And, of course, after the potential drama on Saturday, first non-Red Bull double podium of the season.
Wow. Yeah, true. That's pretty big. And first one since Brazil for Mercedes?
Well, first podium for George all year as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is.
Lewis with his second P2 of the year. Which is quite impressive as well there. Perez, like we said, though, P4. Sainz, decent home race, coming home in, obviously, in fifth.
They're
strolling to beat out Alonso. So your win prediction there, Jamie, did not go well.
No, not at all.
Ocon, Zhou and Gasly after, of course, Yuki Tsunoda's penalties there. He came 11th, less than a tenth ahead of Charles Leclerc, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but no points, so that's very sad. That does bring us nicely onto the quiz for this week, which is Matt's turn to have a go. Because we, of course, had Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton in the first and second places for the 35th time in Formula 1. So that makes them the most common 1-2.
1-2 ever, is it?
But quite common. I think that's they're four clear of the next. So I've taken the top 10 most common. And you have name any of the drivers who contribute to the top 10 most common 1-2 finishers in Formula 1 history.
How many are there?
There are 14. So
14.
Yeah,
right,
you've got a minute and it's starting now.
Max Lewis.
Yes.
Nico Rosberg.
Yes.
Valtteri Bottas.
Yes.
Michael Schumacher.
Mm-hmm.
Rubens Barrichello.
Yep.
Mika Hakkinen.
No.
And Senna.
Yep.
Alain Prost.
Yep.
Nigel Mansell.
Yep.
I mean, Fangio.
No.
No. David Coulthard.
Yep.
Sebastian Vettel.
Yep.
Alonso.
Yep. You got two more. You got 25 seconds.
Button?
No.
I said Rosberg, of course, yep. Already, haven't I? Kimi?
Yep. One more.
One more.
Oh. You've got 10 seconds to go.
10 seconds for one more.
One more. You'll kick yourself.
I will kick myself, you're absolutely right.
And that's your time. Oh dear.
Oh no.
Think who finished. I think the combination.
I didn't say Bottas, did I?
No, you said Bottas, yeah.
Oh, I said Bottas, that's alright.
The combination that he's with is Sebastian Vettel.
Who came to. Mark?
Yes, Mark Webber.
Oh, I did think Mark Webber. I thought, no, that can't be right.
Yeah.
That can't be right.
So, yeah, the 10th place was Alonso and Raikkonen have 15. So any more than 15 gets you in the top 10.
Fair play. But you've also then got to get your mate there as well with you.
So I think Perez and Max are probably the closest, realistic.
Probably the sensible next one to get into. Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, obviously, it probably won't be. I mean, Kimi and Alonso was the last of the better part of 10 years, wouldn't it? Which is quite mad.
Yeah.
To think about.
Yeah.
Could have easily gone a lot longer had they both not.
Just stopped trying after 2008.
Alonso found a decent team to race for rather than being a fraud all the time. Predictions recap, though, Jamie? I feel I did quite well this week.
I think you did. Did you do that well? I know you got pole and win.
I did better than you. Yeah. I got 4 points there, and I also said a Hamilton podium.
Oh, really? Well, fair play.
So 5 points to me.
I got two? Three?
Three, I'm not mistaken.
I mean, that's not bad.
So that brings...
Damage limitation after a bit of a ridiculous shout for the win, to be fair.
So it brings us back to... You're on 25, I'm on 20.
That's
so
not
over. That far behind.
Long way to go.
A long way to go. I mean, driver of the day, Jamie, before we forget.
I mean, I want to give it to Joe Guanyu, because
it's a fair shame.
He's my boy, and he got his best, I would say his best race in Formula One so far. So
okay,
yeah,
that's a bold claim.
I think it probably fair is. Play.
I think on Sunday, I mean, he's driver of the day, not driver of the weekend. So I think George Russell is a fair shame.
Yeah.
Podium from outside the top 10 was pretty good going. In not the fastest car.
And he started behind one of the cars, like Perez, and beat Perez.
No, he didn't.
No,
he was 11. Perez was 12,
no.
I thought.
Russell was 12.
Did he start behind him? Oh, fair play then.
Yeah.
I thought, fair play. Yeah, drive my driver of the day then, pretty easy.
There you go. Matt picks the British driver's shock.
Yeah, exactly. All that British bias coursing through my veins. Race rating though, JB. Barcelona, new changes, fastest version of the circuit we've ever seen. Pretty decent race.
I enjoyed it. I can't remember what my sort of other ratings have been so far, but I'd give it a 6.5.
I was going to say a 7, so I think normally I rate these races slightly higher.
Yeah,
than you do,
I'm a pessimist.
You are the pessimist of the podcast. But there we go then. I think we've rattled through everything we needed to, Jamie.
I think we have.
Like we said, obviously we won't have to do a preview show this week. Of course, we have got a break before. I think we're back in Montreal, aren't we, next? Which should be good fun. But thank you all so much, as always, for watching/listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure you leave a like, get yourself subscribed, hit follow on all those various social medias. And we will be back then next week. We don't quite know where Jamie will be just yet, but to preview the Canadian Grand Prix.